Good evening and welcome to another edition of Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. Hey guys, we have a jam-packed show tonight. I know I say that every week, but really, seriously, this is jam-packed. In fact, it's going to be bleeding over into the next week. I got so much show. And a lot of it has to do with what was going on at CPAC. So we're going to be doing some crazy CPAC coverage this week, next week. In fact, I'm going to be leading off with Glenn Asbury. I know you guys are familiar with Glenn. If you're not, you're in for a treat. We're going to be talking to Glenn about his CPAC experience, presidential politics, etc. I mean, it's a really good interview with Glenn. I'm following that up with an interview with Indiana State Treasurer Richard Murdoch. Now, this was taken at CPAC. Richard Murdoch is looking to do something bigger with his life, I guess. He has an announcement maybe scheduled next week. I suggest you listen to this interview. Now, I caution you that the audio is probably not going to be as up to par as you would expect it to be. The blogger lounge was crazy. So the mics are a little bit hot. There's a little bit of a distortion. But seriously, guys, listen to this interview. It is one you'll want to pay attention to. And Richard Murdoch is a name you'll be hearing a lot more in the future. I just have a feeling. And then I'll be speaking with Michael Knowles, who is political director for the Students for Mitch Daniels outfit. They're encouraging Mitch Daniels, Indiana's wonderful governor, what, I'm biased, I know, to run for president. We're going to be talking to Michael about his experience with Mitch, as Mitch met with about 50 students of this group at CPAC. It's a wonderful story, and we get to find out more about why he's getting behind Mitch Daniels for president. So with everything that is coming up, and again, jam-packed, more is coming next week, but with everything that is going on tonight, skipping the monologue, going straight to the show, I want you to stick around. We're going to be talking with Glenn Asbury next. Stick around.
Hey Gillespie fans, this is Fingers Tiberius Molloy. Listen to The Snark Factor with Fingers Molloy every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time only on FTR Radio. And check out my website, fingersmolloy.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie. I am your host, Josh Gillespie, here on FTRradio.com. With me is a voice you are familiar with, my friend and co-blogger at Hoosier Access, Glenn Asbury. Glenn, thank you for being on the show again.
Hello, Josh. Thank you for having me back for a post-CPAC 11 wrap-up.
That's right. Well, Glenn, you were there for, from what I could tell, the vast majority of the speakers. And you were really vested. I hope that my listeners were following Glenn's tweets. Glenn was tweeting like a madman during CPAC. Just there was so much going on. It was kind of a highly organized chaos.
And yeah, CPAC 11 is a highlight of my year. And this year was a little bit different from ones I've attended in the past because of the new influence of social media in my life. I was on Twitter at the last CPAC, but I didn't have relationships with as many Twitter contacts. And I'll tell you what, Josh, that lent a whole new dimension to CPAC this year, which
it
basically
really
it equated to was that I hardly got any sleep. But, you know, I go for that purpose, but also we're there to see people who are in the political world and are there to make an appearance. There are presidential hopefuls, as you know, and as I'm sure you're going to talk about. So I did indeed attend a number of the speeches.
Well, this was my first CPAC, and I, like you, I had a blast. Now, my experience most of the time, in all honesty, was in the blogger lounge.
Right.
And hearing the speeches pumped in. Now, I could have gone out in the gallery. There was a balcony for bloggers to go out and listen to the speakers and get a good view. But I spent most of my time, making new friendships and keeping up with existing ones and listening to the speeches and trying to take it all in. And but there were clearly speeches that really rang true with a lot of people. And I'm going to try to go in order of appearance from what I can muster and just kind of get your thoughts, because like you said, there were a lot of presidential candidates here. And I want to start off with Herman Cain, who has already formed an exploratory committee. You know, the founder of Godfather's Pizza. He ran for Senate in Georgia and lost, but he has experience in the political scene, and he's been very much involved in the Tea Party. But he doesn't seem to strike me as a Tea Party candidate. What were your impressions of Herman Cain?
Well, it was not my first time to hear Herman Cain speak. I think I've mentioned to you on a previous podcast, Josh, that I have a good relationship with Americans for Prosperity, and Herman Cain is a perennial favorite of that organization and shows up at quite a few of their events, and that's where I've seen him in the past. But I'll tell you, CPAC was no exception. Herman Cain never fails to deliver. He's simply one of the most charismatic people in any field, including and beyond politics, that I've ever heard anywhere, and he just hits it out of the park every time. It's not just that he can give a speech that hits a home run, but you mentioned the fact that he I'm not sure that he actually was the founder of Godfather's Pizza, but I know
he was the CEO. That was it.
He was the CEO, and furthermore, a CEO who pulled it out of a tailspin. I do know that that is true.
I got to be honest. I had never heard of Godfather's Pizza before I heard of
Well, it's not real popular back here in the East. You tend to see it more out west. I remember my grandparents live in Idaho, and I remember there was one of them there in the town where they live in. But so I've had it, and it's a chain similar to Domino's,
yeah,
which we have back here, but located hundreds of branches across the country. And he pulled it out of virtual bankruptcy. So a success story for sure. Someone who's actually been out there and gotten his hands dirty in the business world and pulled a company out of failure into success. Now, I think what you're getting at is what are my thoughts about a potential Herman Cain candidacy? Matt Lewis, he was a writer for Politics Daily, and has just recently, within the last week or so, moved over to the Daily Caller.
Yes, although I noticed today he was still doing some posts for Politics Daily. He probably
he's still wrapping up there.
Yeah.
But he put this idea out there of Herman Cain as a presidential candidate, I'm guessing probably 6 or 8 months ago. And I didn't really take it that seriously at the time. Sure, he's a charismatic guy. But then we find out that, as you mentioned, Cain has formed an exploratory committee and is seriously considering it. Now, here's my personal take. He just doesn't have the name ID to really put it over the line at this point. But
well, I think that's going to be – I find that with the names that we're already familiar with because of the 2008 election, you know, the Romneys, Huckabees, Palins, that a lot of these other guys are going to have some catching up to do. Because, I think Herman Cain, then, you know, Tim Pawlenty, a successful governor from Minnesota.
A blue state, yes.
Yeah, and he also spoke at CPAC. But, you know, I have – a lot of people are going to have a lot of trouble trying to, you know, connect with T-Paw because, you know, it's like, who is he?
The way our party tends to work is that we, for better or for worse, is that we anoint the next in line. So if you were an unsuccessful also-ran in a previous election, I think both by virtue of what Republican practice tends to be and what the media narrative that they tend to push usually happens to be, that a Republican candidate who ran in a previous election always seems to have a leg up. At least they seem to. Whether they actually do or not, only time will tell. Mm-hmm. In fact, just a brief aside, I really am kind of surprised that no one, although not ungrateful by any means, I'm grateful that no one has announced for president yet, formally, but I'm kind of surprised. I mean, Mitt Romney had done so way earlier on in the cycle the last time around. I think it was like the first Monday after New Year's. It was way early in January of 2007, mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah.
And then Mike Huckabee was right on his heels, etc. So that hasn't happened yet. So we'll see how this all shakes out. Now, Pawlenty, again, this was not the first time I had heard him. I heard him at the last CPAC and also the year before. Now, he didn't run in 2008, but he was on John McCain's shortlist.
Yes, he was.
We heard he was at the time, and he has subsequently confirmed that he was in his new book, which I have not read, but I've leafed through. I have always thought he seems like a really nice guy. I've heard he was an effective governor of a very blue state. As he put in his speech, the only state that managed not to vote for Ronald Reagan two times, in
yes.
both 1980 and 1984.
Although Mondale only
was
won that state. What he was from that state, but he only won that by, I think, either 5,000 or 500 votes.
It was
very close.
Yes, which says a lot about Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
Right there. I like Pawlenty. It did seem that he was struggling to connect a little bit, and I might be letting my fellow listeners' impressions that I saw on Twitter bleed over a little bit, but I don't think so. He's very earnest and very nice and probably very capable, but I really wonder, Josh, if he's going to break out of the pack and have what it takes to vault to the top of the heap.
Well, you speak of connecting, and it seems as if there were two speakers who really did connect, in their own ways, mind you. And I'm thinking, first of all, of Donald Trump, who seemed to connect with many and at the same time push so many away. but there were people who weren't going to be voting for him anyway. And then Mitch Daniels. Obviously, you know, we're fans of Mitch's. He's our governor.
We aren't biased.
No, we're by no means are we biased.
Heavens,
but what did you think of the Donald speech, aside from his clearly accurate statement regarding Ron Paul?
You mean I'm not allowed to talk about that?
Go right ahead. I'm not going to silence you, Glenn.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I am a huge Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice fan. Both my wife and I are. That's, I think, the only reality show that both of us is must viewing for both of us every week together. When I first heard I actually didn't hear until that morning, Thursday morning, that he was going to show up and speak. I don't know if much anyone knew that he was, but he was there at the behest of Go Proud, actually.
I didn't know that either.
Yes, they issued some press releases making that clear. And then I kept hearing different time frames, and he finally showed up and came out onto the stage to great fanfare, I might add, about 3 o'clock on Thursday, which is the first day of CPAC, for those of you who haven't been able to be to attend one yet. And in all candor, there had been some good moments up until that point. I understand that Michelle Bachmann's speech was very energetic. I did not make it in time to hear her, and I was tired from a very short night the night before, so I was really lagging.
Something real quick in your defense,
yeah.
Glenn. For those who do not know Glenn, and they keep on hearing about your late nights, let me assure you that while Glenn is a man for all seasons and one who can connect with many people,
I have no idea, folks, what he's getting ready to say here. So
you are not a partier.
Oh well, this is true.
You are not what many of the probably many of the people who were out late. You were.
Well, I don't drink.
Well, there you go. There you go. I don't want people to get the wrong impression of you, Glenn.
I love spending time with people, which
yes.
I think probably comes through. But yeah, this is true. I mean, when I'm at home, I'm generally not out in the evenings.
Well,
so,
we're married, Glenn. We don't do late evenings.
Well, that's true of a lot of us that are at CPAC, and also probably true of many of our friends that
yes.
are at home.
But,
they're probably
But what of the Donald here, real quick? I mean, yeah. he made a pretty bold statement about Ron Paul.
Well, yeah, just to tie back to what I was saying, yeah. the energy level in the room just upped dramatically.
Oh, it was palpable.
Now, only to quickly sag for the first couple of minutes as he pulled out his prepared text, and I was like, oh, please. And I actually tweeted, whoever his people are, you need to tell your man he needs to throw his notes away. But then he did. He did exactly that for the remaining 10 minutes of the 12, 13, however long he was up there. And the crowd loved it. I mean, it was just... You were watching a guy who's very good at what he does.
Yep.
And obviously a very persuasive man because he's built the empire to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Make his case that we need capable leadership in this country and that, quote, if I decide to run, here's why you should consider me as a proven leader. I have to say, I felt like he made very good points. Now, and I respect his ability to create wealth. That is not to say that if Donald Trump decides to actually run for president, which I'm very skeptical will actually happen, but that is not to say that he will not bring significantly accumulated baggage along with him. I think we all know what we think about that.
Yes.
But yes, you're right. About halfway through, maybe slightly over, I think he was getting booed by the Palestinians over something. Maybe made some pro-war statement or something. I don't know.
I think he talked about how he was going to he would probably have a much more aggressive relationship.
Well, he attacked one of their pet cause. I mean, not attack, but he mentioned something that was not a cause or was a pet cause of theirs, and he was not positive about it. But then he goes, listen, Ron Paul is a nice guy, but he doesn't have a chance. He can't win. It was just so blatant. And so
it was. Then he followed up with he has zero chance, and he almost did that little snake move when he says you're fired.
Yeah, I know. He just drove it home.
He did. They went nuts. They went nuts.
Well, a small fraction of them went nuts, but the rest of the crowd just loved it.
Because
we wanted to see them get their comeuppance. Little did we know. You know, this just occurred to me, Josh. Maybe that crowd had some lingering animosity from Trump that got carried over a few minutes later to the Rumsfeld and Cheney appearance.
No. I think that the appearance by surprise appearance, honestly, from what I could tell, from
Vice it was by Dick Cheney.
Yeah, by Vice President Cheney.
Yeah,
In support of his good buddy Donald Rumsfeld. You know, I don't think there was any bad blood. I think that they, you know, those people, they have such a vitriol for George Bush and for Dick Cheney and for the entire war effort.
Right.
And regardless of where they stand, the libertarian principle is anti-war.
Yes, I think also, remember, you may not, because again, you were up in the blogger lounge probably at this point, but Rand Paul, whom I actually like, see, I don't mind Ron in many ways. Domestically, I have no problem with many of his policies. But when it comes to foreign affairs, yeah, serious issues.
Yeah.
And Rand tempers that a little bit, and I actually supported Rand in the Kentucky Senate race over Trey Grayson. So I like Rand, but I think he draws much of the same crowd that his father does.
Oh, he does.
And then Rumsfeld came out right after him. And so you had those two sessions scheduled back to back with maybe you might not have had some of the same people in the crowd. Who knows? But
who knows?
In any event, there were some pretty vicious slurs.
Yeah, there was a kid who shouted war criminal out.
War criminal, draft dodger, and something about shekels.
You know, I have to say this. I don't care who is in the White House.
Oh, totally. I know what you're going to say.
Or who has been our vice president. They have earned the respect of the office, and it makes me sick when we have people like that, Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, attack our elected leaders like that.
Well, here's how I felt about it and what I repeatedly said to others. if this had been a neutral venue, just your given stadium out there somewhere, and just some public rally of some, it's a campaign rally, I would have understood it. But this is the Conservative Political Action Conference, and let me say quickly, there was some hoopla on Twitter about this today, and Rush talked about it some, and I saw my friend Lisa DePasquale, who organizes the Conservative Political Action Conference, tweet some remarks to the effect that I think she was a little hurt and felt a little personally slighted by it. CPAC should not have to bear the blame for this kind of thing. I'm guessing they gave the benefit of the doubt to Ron Paul supporters that they could actually conduct themselves in a way that was becoming and respectfully listen to a speaker.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the Ron Paul supporters have been there year after year after year. That's the reason why the guy constantly wins the straw poll.
Now, they have been, but there was an additional level of unruliness this year.
Because
Cheney showed up last year, and he didn't get booed at all. And it was a total surprise last year as well. Liz spoke. His daughter, Liz, spoke last year, and then she brought her dad out on stage for 5-7 minutes, about the same length of time as he was there for Rumsfeld this year, to say a few words to – I don't know. Maybe it was just the combination of both Cheney and Rumsfeld that sent him over the edge. But in any event – we should also hastily add that they did the right thing, the CPAC powers that be, and the hecklers were extracted from the room by security as soon as they put it. That just shouldn't have to happen at a conservative. This is not LPAC. This is CPAC.
That's right.
And if Dick Cheney isn't a conservative, or Don Rumsfeld either, for that matter, I don't know who is.
They're neoconservatives, Glenn, don't you know? I might have to start questioning your rhino-ness.
I guess. There was another speaker I wanted to talk to you about.
Yes.
And let's see. He came – well, it slipped my mind. So who else were you wanting to ask about?
Well, we can gush all we want about Mitch Daniels. We're kind of
– oh, yeah.
Like I said, we're spoiled with Mitch.
Yes, we are.
But I think that people have heard us enough talk about our own governor. He's awesome. That's it.
Well, the record speaks for itself.
It really does. And I still make the claim that I'm not sure. And I don't think he is going to run for president. But if he does, it's hard for me to not want to support him. But and according to Drudge Report, he stole the show. And who am I to argue with the Drudge Report?
The people who were in attendance at the banquet where he spoke, because he spoke at one of the evening banquets, and so the vast majority of attendees were not able to be present for that because it's not only a paid event, it's a very expensive one.
Exactly.
To our friend Fingers Malloy, who's also from FTR Radio, and
yes.
Fingers wangled a ticket from somebody and
no way.
Sent them in there, and he told me that they were served both Chilean sea bass and filet mignon.
Oh!
So you could see why, when hundreds of people were served that sort of cuisine,
that's definitely a price ticket.
$250 or whatever it was, something like that, for to be there. So
well, there is,
but yeah, we love Mitch. He's wonderful.
He is. Well, there's one final person that I want to talk to you about. He wasn't a speaker at CPAC. And in fact, he mostly just went around speaking to the bloggers, introducing himself to various people of importance.
Okay.
And again, the Indiana connection. He was Indiana State Treasurer Richard Murdoch.
Yes.
And from what we can tell, Richard is going to be making a announcement on the 22nd regarding a potential primary challenge to Indiana's own Richard Lugar.
Yes.
At least that's what seems to be indicated. Richard was very coy about it. If there is anybody to challenge Richard Lugar, and mind you, there are people who are thinking about challenging him who I greatly admire, but if there was one person who could challenge Richard Lugar and take his place as a statesman, a true statesman in the United States Senate, it is Richard Murdoch. The man is, he exudes humility and confidence at the same time.
Yes, somehow a combination of both humility and charisma and confidence, as you said. Of course, Richard Murdoch is no stranger to you or to me. I got to know him a little bit when we rode Mike Pence's campaign bus at the end of October, and he went along for at least one whole day of rallies all across the state. And I heard his stump speech. I witnessed his speaking skills firsthand at about six gatherings, and it was something to behold. Again, he's in that rare pantheon of potential political candidate. Well, he's been a political candidate in the past. He's our state treasurer, and it looks like he will be again very soon. He speaks with authority and with passion, and it comes from the heart, and also a vast reserve of knowledge that is just frankly astounding. He has a degree in – his background is in geology. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. It is.
And so not what you would normally consider the pedigree of a – what is considered by some as the pedigree for a successful political candidate, but he has been, and I absolutely believe he has the chance to prove that once again, even sooner than he thought. And your listeners are going to be able to hear some evidence of that and decide for themselves as well. But I'm pretty sure they're going to like what they hear.
Well, I am thrilled. Well, the one thing that we'll hear in the upcoming interview that kind of cracks me up about Richard is that he's known to do the Lincoln Day circuit here in Indiana. And he is known all over the state for that. And as he put it, chickens quake at the sound of his voice. Of course, obviously, a reference to all the chicken dinners that one gets at Lincoln Day.
Yeah, they get called rubber chicken dinners.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. And I want people to listen to this interview, and I apologize for the quality. The mic was a little hot that day, so it's going to sound a little scratched, but and a little distorted. But I want my listeners to pay attention, because you will hear a man who speaks from the heart, who is genuine, who knows the issues, and for a person who has prior elected experience. He is in his second term as state treasurer. He was a county commissioner in Vandenberg County down in southern Indiana, which is the Evansville area. You know, I know that a lot of Tea Party folk, they shy away to people who have been
for incumbents of any kind.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. But Richard is a man who knows his constitution, not just the state constitution, but the United States Constitution through and through. He doesn't come across as a party Tea Party kind of candidate. He just comes across as a man of virtue, a man of knowledge, and a man who you know you could have full confidence will represent you in the United States Senate, should he run.
Should he run.
Should he run.
Add that qualifier.
Add that qualifier, which won't be a qualifier, I'm guessing, next week. I don't know. I'm just throwing
it. Then you take it away with the other hand.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, well, Glenn, thank you for being on this week's show.
Oh, it's been fun. We could have done this and gone on a lot longer.
This could have been the entire show, in all honesty. I won't lie. Yeah. I won't lie. but thank you for being on. Thank you for giving us your insights. And real quick, again, because I always like to promote my friends, where can people find you, Glenn?
I blog for Hoosier Access, and you can go to HoosierAccess.com and read my posts there every once in a while. And I also blog for Pundit League. You can go to PunditLeague.us and find my columns there. And I regularly blog my 10 questions column, which seems to be my most popular feature.
The Twitter personality of the week,
personality of the week. Joshua Gillespie has been one a few weeks back.
Yes.
And that one goes up at my own blog, Ramblings, which you can find at Glenn L. Asbury, glenlasbury.wordpress.com. And thank you so much, Josh, for having me back.
Thank you, Glenn. Stick around for more. We'll be speaking with Richard Murdoch in the next segment. You're listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. Stick around.
Stories. We all love them, and we all have them. Whether you're a candidate, public office, or a small business, you have a story which is incredibly unique to you. The problem isn't having a story. The problem is how to tell your story. And that's where my friend Jacob Barry comes in. Jacob is a gifted storyteller who has the added bonus of being an experienced campaign professional, marketer, sales professional, and small business owner. Not only can he put the right words together, he knows exactly what needs to be said and how to say it. So the next time you need a speech, sales letter, article, or marketing piece, trust the professional I go to. Trust Jacob Perry. You can reach him on the web at www.jacobperry.us. Give him a call at 772-678-0820. That is 772-678-0820. Or drop him a line at jacob@jacobperry.us.
Back to FTR Radio's continuing coverage of CPAC 2011. This is Josh Gillespie. You may be familiar with me from Gillespie, airing every Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. Shameless plug, I gotta do it. Anyway, I am sitting here with Indiana's State Treasurer, Richard Murdoch. Richard, thank you for being here at CPAC.
You bet, Josh. Glad to be with you.
Well, what brings you here to CPAC?
Well, we've certainly, as the rumors have been flying across Indiana, we've been taking a real serious look at possibly getting into the race in the primary of 2012 to run against Mr. Ruby. We've been giving that a lot of thought, and we'll be having an announcement on the 22nd of February. So in the meantime, just wanted to come here and say hi to many of my conservative friends.
Well, your name has definitely been floated around for quite a while as someone who might potentially challenge Senator Lugar. Your name, State Senator Mike Delf's name has been thrown around, so is a couple of previous Tea Party candidates, Don Bates Jr., Richard Baney. But a name that seems to really stick out with a lot of voters has been your name. And what's your response to something like that?
Well, I'll be honest. Even as long ago as last summer, some of the leading Republican Party officials in the state started asking me to consider doing this. Frankly, my response was, it's very flattering, very nice, but what do I ever do to you? You know, if people want me to get in this, and it was kind of intimidating. Didn't have a great desire to do it, even after the election when we led the ticket in the state. Had a lot of calls, and I still didn't have the great interest in doing it until I started to see how Senator Lugar was reacting. He was putting out news releases, and basically, I thought throwing the governor under the bus with some of the polling data he was releasing, I would walk fire for our governor. So I started looking at it and found out there's a huge amount of support. Having just won statewide, obviously we've got a great organization. It's time to do this. You know, it is time. Mr. Lugar's been in office now, soon to be for 36 years. He's asking the good folks in Indiana to send him there for 42 years. And I think he's out of step with most members of the Republican Party of Indiana, and we're going to have that open discussion.
Well, it seems as if Senator Lugar seems to have been prodding actually even people to challenge him, even from the right. He has, there was a recent article from a Fort Wayne television station that said that with Lugar kind of quoting him saying, bring on the Tea Party.
Exactly. His attitude has been very strange. He's quoted the Tea Party, according to some reports, but then he's put out statements that quite honestly sound very reminiscent of Barack Obama's those angry people who cling to their God and their guns kind of statements. So I know the interview you're referring to, he said Tea Party people need to get real.
That's it, yes.
And he said they're just speaking in cliches and they're just angry. Well, if they are angry, and I think many of them are, it's because they feel the Constitution of the United States is no longer being honored.
Well, and I don't think it's necessarily just Tea Party people. Regular people are upset with with the way that Senator Lugar has carried himself in the Senate, seemingly not just prodding so-called Tea Party people, but just average constituents who are upset with him. Now, I've talked with people who say that they can't even get through Lugar's office to speak with a staffer, and when they do, they're rude. You know, if they challenge him for supporting whether it was the Star Treaty or supporting Supreme Court justice nominees, they get a very terse response from his office.
There is a seeming sense of disconnection. I hear about it all the time, that the staff folks don't seem to relate to Hoosiers. There's just a lot going on. You know, I've often heard it referred to as the Potomac poisoning. You know, you get in this city long enough and you lose connections with where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's my strong conviction we don't need just a senator from Indiana. We need one for Indiana. And so many of the issues, so many of the votes that have come up lately, certainly he has distanced himself from the Republican primary voters. We've done the polling and we know that to be true. And I think it's time.
Well, you've been in politics, specifically Indiana politics, for quite some time. You were previously the state auditor. Now you're now our state treasurer. Just won a second term. You're very popular, especially when you came out in support of. Now you're going to have to tell me with the details here, but
sure.
It's been a little bit with the Chrysler situation.
Sure.
And you actually went to the Supreme Court, didn't you, to defend?
We did. And just if I may correct something, I didn't serve as state auditor. I served as a county commissioner, but
I
was re-elected in my second term as state
auditor. I apologize.
Treasurer,
so. You had served as auditor.
That's right.
Flipping you with Auditor Barry.
Auditor Barry, who was my predecessor as treasurer and then elected
as
auditor.
That's it.
There you go.
There you go. That's it.
But to your point about Chrysler, Indiana, several forms of state government invested in the bonds. Secured debt of Chrysler Corporation. For the first time in American history, secured creditors were not treated as first in line in the event of a bankruptcy. They were put at the bottom of the pile. And there were several violations of law, certainly violations of bankruptcy law, but most importantly, the Constitution itself was violated. Article 1, Section 8 says the Congress shall make uniform bankruptcy law. They began doing that work almost immediately in 1791.
Mm-hmm.
First thing was to define secured creditors as meaning you're first in line. The administration, no administration, no courts have the right to make the law, and yet that's what they did in this case. There were also clear violations of the Fifth Amendment. Due process was just thrown away in this case. Someone had to take this on. I didn't look forward to it. It wasn't something I savored. But I'm a fiduciary, which means I have to put other people's interests in front of my own as I manage their funds.
Mm-hmm.
I had no choice but to take this case, and I did it proudly. And we went to the U.S. Supreme Court ultimately. And I found this is a unique bit of American law, I guess. You can actually lose the battle and win the greater war. Very quietly, on December 14th, 2009, the U.S. Supreme Court granted our writ of certiorari, took the case, and immediately struck down the decision of the underlying court in the case.
Mm-hmm.
So they erased that horrible precedent from law. It can no longer be claimed as a precedent, which is what was happening. People were saying, I need to go bankrupt. Let me throw away my secured creditors and start all over, just like you did for Chrysler. Well, that's not a way to run a financial system.
Mm-hmm.
So the court said that cannot stand. They struck it down. Unfortunately, they didn't give us a venue by which we could go back and sue for our funds. But we had a profound effect in the financial system of America because we made the law come back to what it should be.
Well, it seems as if anybody has any question about whether Richard Murdoch knows the Constitution, he certainly does. Not just Indiana's Constitution, but the federal Constitution. You've also been very popular on Indiana's Lincoln Day circuit. I mean, it seems as if, you know, people may think that, you know, maybe Richard's been running for this position for a long time. Let me be the first to attest that if you go to a Lincoln Day dinner where Richard Murdoch is speaking, you do not get a typical campaign speech at all. You get a history lesson. And you can hear the same story on Abraham Lincoln told by different people, but Richard Murdoch brings it alive. It's like Lincoln is standing right there next to you.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. It is true that chickens quake at the sound of my name. I do so many Lincoln Day dinners. No chicken wants to know that I'm in the neighborhood. They know what's coming next. But even this year, with exactly 100 Lincoln Day dinners in Indiana, I learned just yesterday I've already been invited to speak at 28 of the 100. So this year, though, just to set the mood, Josh, you know, we just celebrated the 100th anniversary of a truly great president, Ronald Reagan. So this year's speech is about Ronald Reagan. A little bit of comparison between the management and leadership styles of Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan, but I've given it three times now. I'm still perfecting it a bit, but I enjoy speaking history and reminding people of our Republican roots.
Well, I know that whenever I attend a Lincoln Day dinner, and I know that I'll be on the circuit again this year myself with my boss, it's my hope that Richard Murdoch is the speaker, because I'm not saying this just because Richard is my guest. Seriously, if you've heard his speech, they are phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal, filled with very exact detail.
Well, I like to think
and even with passion.
Well, I like to think I never give a speech. I just tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
I have people say to me all the time, how do you do this without notes? Well, I don't need notes because I just know the story and I just want to repeat the story. And with both Lincoln and Reagan, you know, I learned that a long time ago there were four basic type of Lincoln Day dinner speeches. There's the I'm the candidate, this is what I want to do for you speech.
Mm-hmm.
There's the I'm the office holder, this is what I've done for you and you should really feel good about it speech.
Yes.
There is the ever popular Democrats bad, Republicans good speech. That's what people expect when they get to Lincoln Day.
Mm-hmm.
That fourth type of speech is just something different. And I find people will relate to our history, and that's why I enjoy sharing the story with them.
Have Lincoln and Reagan been inspirations to you, especially as you've considered public office in general, not necessarily, you know, federal, state, local, whatever, but just in public office?
Absolutely, especially in the sense that if you would have looked at the resumes of either of them, you never would have predicted where they would end up. I mean, come on, a guy from Eureka College who started his career as a sports broadcaster, went to Hollywood where his career effectively ended by making movies with a monkey.
Hey, that time with Bonzo is a classic.
It's a classic now only because of who Ronald Reagan ultimately became.
That's right.
And the same way with Abraham Lincoln. You know, people think he was this famous lawyer, but he was just an average debt collection lawyer. If he were alive today, he'd be doing TV commercials. And his commercials would start with the words, have you been injured in an accident? I mean, that's the kind of lawyer Abraham Lincoln was. And yet he, through this long series of losses and defeats, persevered, time and circumstance put him in the right place, and obviously he truly did save the nation.
Well, Richard, I thank you for your time. I know that you have plenty of other people to meet and mingle with, and I'm just thrilled that you took the time to spend some time with me, that you're here at CPAC. I'm gushing, seriously, over Richard Murdoch, because he's one of the people I most admire in the state of Indiana as far as our elected officials go. Richard, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Honored to be with you, Josh.
Josh Gillespie of FTRradio.com's Gillespie. Hey, have you ever been out and realized that you're about to miss your favorite FTR program? I'll tell you what you're going to do. You download the Shoutcast app to your smartphone. That way you will never miss another FTR show. So if you think you're going to be out and you're about to miss Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor, you're about to miss Jenny Erickson, or you're about to miss the Loud Talker, the Needle, have no fear. Download the Shoutcast app. Hey, you could even listen to my show, Gillespie, airing every Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on FTRradio.com. Download the Shoutcast app today.
Hey, I'm Essie Cupp. You're listening to FTR Radio, From the Right Radio, online at FTRradio.com.
Back to Gillespie. I'm your host, Josh Gillespie, here on FTR Radio. With me in this segment is someone who I'm very interested in, the political director of Students for Mitch, Michael Knowles. Michael, thanks for being on the show.
Josh, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. You know, you and a couple of your other college buddies have started this grassroots political action committee to kind of encourage my governor to run for president. What was the impetus behind this?
Sure. Well, there were about four of us who came to the idea of starting this draft annuals pack, and we all came to the same conclusion at the same time. Right before the midterm elections happened, we were looking at the one of the biggest issues of that election, which is our impending national debt, and looking ahead at 2012. The president released his budget yesterday, and it shows no change of plan from this spend away our generation's future. And we looked and we said, you know, President Obama won his election in 2008 because our generation voted for him and fundraised for him in record numbers. over the last 2 years, all he has done is sort of spend away our futures. And I've had people in our Draft Daniels organization describe it as tantamount to generational theft. It's a betrayal of America's youth. We have a $14 trillion debt today, $19 trillion by 2015. The president's budget that was released today will, or released yesterday rather, will increase our national debt by $7.2 trillion within a decade. That is the wrong direction. For all of President Obama's rhetorical flourishes, he has no intention to change course, and he sort of, in many ways, sold our generation down the tube. So we needed a viable alternative. We looked around, and we saw that there was only one option. There's only one guy who was seriously talking about the issue of our generation, the biggest issue of 2012 in any sort of serious way, and that's Governor Mitch Daniels, the best governor in America. Governor Daniels is the only potential candidate with a proven record of turning deficits into surpluses. He turned a $600 million deficit when he became governor into a $370 million surplus, all without really raising taxes. And by just having fiscal responsibility, fiscal accountability, and acting like an adult, which our federal elected officials have proven themselves incapable of doing. We also looked and we saw that in terms of an alternative to President Obama, Governor Daniels was the only choice. Governor Romney, many say he's the front runner, but Romney here in Massachusetts is startlingly similar to the president's new health care law. And I think the only person who disagrees is Governor Romney himself.
I would tend to agree. I've always viewed Romney care as the blueprint for Obamacare, and to me that is an outright violation of even Republican politics. I know that there are people who will question, true conservatism versus rhinoism, whatever. This is beyond the pale. This is liberalism, is what that is.
We looked at that, the few pundits who are still saying that Governor Romney is the clear frontrunner in 2012, I think that misses the lesson that it's still a 2010 midterm election. The American public, since the new health care law's inception of the bill, has repudiated the law. It's bad for businesses, it's bad for the health care industry, it's bad for our generation, who's going to have to foot the bill. So for that reason, I think Governor Romney is a real viable candidate. Governor Palin, of course, resigned as governor of Alaska, so she probably will not get a promotion anytime soon to the presidency. Governor Pawlenty, of course, seems like a nice enough guy. I rode in an elevator with him, as a matter of fact. But he's just not, he doesn't have that inspirational stuff. He doesn't have the record to back him up. I don't think he'll go too far. John Huntsman, great ambassador. I don't think he's really got the... got enough to make it to the presidency. At this point, it seems like he's running for vice president. And then who's left? Governor Daniels. And Governor Daniels is not just another man left standing. He happens to be the perfect foil to President Obama. And that's really what we're looking for in this election.
Well, there have been mixed signals coming from Governor Daniels, I think would probably say at the very least. He keeps on saying that either he doesn't want to run, or that, he's still thinking about it, won't make his decision until later in the year. And then there was this article last week in Politico where he says, if I run, I have the money and I have the backing. But at the same time, we still don't know if he's going to do it. Now, one of the other reasons he may not run is that one of his closest friends, if not his best friend, is Governor Haley Barbour of Mississippi, and Governor Barbour may consider running. Would he be a viable alternative?
Governor Barbour seems like he is. It seems like he would run for president at this point. He just came out today and said he was very seriously considering it. Unfortunately, he is Mitch Daniels. He's a fine candidate, a fine governor, but he, if you saw the speech at CPAC that Governor Daniels gave, he made the other speakers look like children. The other speakers were spouting. He truly did. The other speakers, Governor Romney, Governor Pawlenty, they were spouting these Republican platitudes that are really meaningless with such an urgent crisis like a national debt and one of the Americans not being able to find a job. Governor Daniels stood up there and he discussed the issues that nobody on either side of the political spectrum is willing to talk about. Debt, deficit, entitlement reform, all the third rail of American politics, he just grabs hold to. He talks about like an adult. So Governor Barbour seems like a nice enough guy, but I don't think that he's really someone who could take down President Obama in 2012. And, you know, we actually had the privilege of meeting with Governor Daniels a few days ago down at CPAC in Washington. And he was very honest with us. He said that he does not know if he's going to run for president or not. There are five women in his life that don't particularly want him to.
Being his wife and his daughters.
That's true. Not five mistresses or anything like that.
No.
But he, during his speech at CPAC, he said a line that really gave us a lot of hope, which was that he would not stand in the rubble of his republic and say, "I told you so." And that's really what we're facing. We're facing this red menace that he talks about. And this time it's not communism. This time it's a red menace of ink, because our national debt is set to exceed our entire gross domestic product, and that is an unacceptable burden for the American public at large, and certainly for my generation.
Real quick, explain to our listeners this meeting that the Students for Mitch had with Governor Daniels. From what I heard, he was completely blown away by the presentation.
It was really wonderful. Governor Daniels had heard about us. What we really enjoyed about our organization is that, as I said, we were founded by four students at Yale. This guy, Max Eaton, who's our national director, made an official pack. We spread the 52 chapters across the country pretty quickly. But unlike these other students for candidate groups, we were not started by the candidates pack themselves. We really have no communication with Governor Daniels or his team. But they had come in contact with us, and they had said that the governor wants to meet with us at CPAC. So we blocked out however many hours of time, assuming that the governor would talk to us for about 10 minutes, say hello, say thank you, and get out of there and go do his job. He came in and he spoke with us for 40 minutes.
Wow.
Which was just incredible, right before his Reagan banquet speech. And he said he was very blown away. That a lot of people have been asking him to run for president, but he's been most inspired by this grassroots movement across the country, students who understand, in his words, the raw deal that we're about to be handed. And, I've met a few politicians doing these sort of things, and I've never met potential presidential candidates so genuine, so serious, so such an adult. A lot of the politicians that we've seen are just panderers who look at polls and say the line that will get them the most votes, and that is not Governor Daniels. And for that reason, he's reluctant to run for president. He's made that very clear. But, the last question we asked him is, "Governor, you're our only hope. Will you please run for president of the United States?" And he said that he wasn't sure if he would do it, but if he did it, we would have a strong showing, we would raise a lot of money, we would get our message out, we'd give him a fight, and we would have some fun. So we at least took a little hope out of that, and we certainly added his speech later on that night.
Well, finally, real quick, you guys started this group at Yale, but Governor Daniels is a Princeton man. What is that kind of jumping the shark? Are you turning your back on your Yale brethren?
Well, we did consider that. That was a consideration. A national presidential pack like this started at Yale for a Tiger down at Princeton is a concern. But we thought President Obama is a Harvard man, so we can at least take what we can get.
Excellent. Well, Michael, thank you very much for your time and for starting this pack with you and your friends. The growth has been amazing, and obviously I'm biased towards Governor Daniels. I hope it works. I hope it has a positive impact on his decision. Michael, thanks for being on the show.
Josh, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for tuning in to Gillespie this evening. My thanks go out to Glenn Asbury, Indiana State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, and Michael Knowles, Political Director of Students for Daniels. Stay tuned for Michael Fidenza. We'll see you next week.